Welcome back to Cinema Vino.
Hey guys.
Howdy.
We're here for a totally new episode of Cinema Vino. We're going to look at Tucker and Dale versus Evil, cult classic.
Here's Sean Jordan.
And hey. Travis Budd.
Hey.
Todd Wofford.
I was getting around to that.
Okay.
Maybe. But yeah, we're drinking Seaglass Pinot Noir this time. And going back to a classic Pinot Noir that has been around the market for years, but just kind of like the movies, doubling back on stuff we haven't had in a while.
Where's this one from?
This is from California, Santa Barbara County.
Yeah.
So, an interesting wine that we got in back in the day by popular demand. Everybody was asking for it, and so we actually brought it into this state because everybody was clamoring for it.
You know, it's called Santa Barbara, but I don't see a lot about Christmas.
No. I don't either. It's an interesting point.
Santa Barbie.
Mm-hmm. Something to think about.
Yeah. Tucker and Dale versus Evil. This was Sean's pick for our movies to revisit, and this is definitely one that might have snuck under people's radar. It was a lower budget movie from 10 years ago, 11 years ago.
It came out in 2011, so it'd be 10 years ago.
Yep. And
direct to DVD.
So it went through a little bit of distribution hell. It made the circuits on a lot of movie festivals. And so I saw it at the Dallas International Film Festival when it was making those circuits. And then I think it got picked up for distribution about 2 or 3 years later. So it honestly was around for a while before it got picked up by, I think, Magnet as a distribution company. And I think it went direct to Netflix streaming when that was very new.
I'm going to go ahead and interrupt you there. I just remembered that you told me the story of the Dallas thing and you met Alan Tudyk's parents?
Alan Tudyk's parents were there because Alan Tudyk is from Allen, Texas.
That's a bit on the nose.
I know. It is. I want to say it's Allen. It's one of the Dallas suburbs. But yeah, they were there. Alan Tudyk was not. They were there to see their son's movie for the first time because the only place you could see it was film festivals. So this would have been, I think, probably around 2011, if not a little bit after. We found out about it because we were big into horror movies, me and my college roommates at the time. So anytime like new movies would drop, we would watch the trailers, kind of have it queued up for like what to watch for. And then we kept waiting for it to drop on DVD and it never did because it never got picked up by a distribution company.
Yeah.
So we went and saw it, Dallas International Film Festival. Hilarious. Loved it. Great movie. And then we were like, okay, it's going to get picked up any day now.
You would think so.
And then it didn't. So, and it's kind of weird to think what kind of movies, fall under this because it's got a good cast. It's got good acting, great writing. This was kind of the era where horror movies were doing a little bit more, meta, hold a mirror up to yourself. Self-aware horror tropes of like what horror movies really play into. And so I think this falls along the same lines of like Cabin in the Woods, things like that, where you're looking at some of the horror tropes and you're kind of laughing at it. So this movie, it's Tucker and Dale. It's two backwoods kind of,
yokels.
Podunk yokels. It's Adam Levine and Alan Tudyk, and they are Tucker and Dale. They're going out to see their new cabin that they just bought to try and fix her up.
Not Adam Levine from...
No, Levine. It might be Labine.
That would have been Labine. A totally different movie.
Labine?
Yeah. I didn't know that other guy's name. Like, if you saw him, you would recognize him. But he's, yeah.
Yeah, he's a Canadian extra he's...
I almost said character actor.
Yeah, he kind of plays like the chubby best friend, character actor in shows. He's always the number two. He's not the number one.
I remember he licked a toad in the X-Files episode once.
You might remember him from the show Reaper on CW.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was the best friend on Reaper.
Okay.
I think that was his big break.
Was that just one season, right?
I think it was one or two seasons.
Okay.
God, who was the devil in that?
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Elizabeth Hurley.
No.
No.
Frank Gorshin. Nope.
Nope.
Keep going.
Anyway, so yeah, he's kind of a character actor. Always plays the number two, but he kind of plays the number one in this, and Alan Tudyk plays the straight guy.
Yeah.
He's the serious, more straightforward. And so they're going to their lake house. At the same time, there is a group of college age co-eds, three girls, four guys, all there's a surprising number of college co-eds all fitting into one car heading
college
to some sort of camp out where they're drinking. Oh, Ray Weiss.
That Josh Duhamel?
That's who it is.
That's
Ray
not
Weiss.
Josh Duhamel.
Ray Weiss was the devil in the Reaper series from 2007 to 2009.
So I'm not wrong for thinking that could have been Josh Duhamel from this distance.
Yeah. Sure.
It's all a little bit leathery, a little bit salt and peppery.
Continue.
Anyway, so these college co-eds are going out and they see some very superficial views of Tucker and Dale. They observe them and they're like, oh, those guys are kind of creepy. And Tyler Labine is sort of peeking through the cans, looking at the girls' cans. And
foreshadowing.
So at one point, you know, they're trying to make friends and all they do is come off as creepy yokels. And so they go off, the co-eds go camping, Tucker and Dale go off to their cabin and then they have run-ins where they keep having like, you know, events that make them look creepier than they are. And it turns into them trying to help and just ends up that the teens keep killing themselves or dying in some crazy circumstances. So it just continues to escalate in some Scooby-Doo hijinks.
Yes.
I think if I were to equate it to anything else.
Yeah. It's like watching a Scooby gang get maimed horribly.
Yeah.
By their own devices.
Yeah. Impaled on sticks and thrown into wood chippers, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's got all the great horror tropes. It touches all the good bases.
And it's shocking to me now that like you are the reason I watched this. And this was my second time watching it. So we talked about it off stream. And I watched it and I loved it.
I will evangelize this movie till the day I die.
I watched it the second time and I had my dad watch it with me and he fucking loved it. The weird thing about some of these horror slasher movies, and this isn't exactly a slasher movie, but it has the same, I would say, budget for one. The great thing about a low budget slasher film is that the fake blood and then the special effects and then you maybe have an explosion or something is super fucking cheap. All you have to have is a few sets, a few actors. A lot of these are no-name actors, except for Alan Tudyk and what the other
Tyler Labine.
Yeah.
Yep. I think it's Tyler.
And there were some of the kids I recognized from stuff, but I couldn't quite place.
A little bit, maybe somewhat up-and-comers, but they up and went.
Yeah.
I haven't seen them since. But the thing about these, those type of like horror films is that they're super cheap to make, and it's like a gamble. It can be hit or miss, and then you have those crazy, we were just talking about the torture porns, like the Saw, which also don't cost hardly anything.
Don't cost nothing. Well, and that's
just special effects, blood, maybe an explosion, or oh, how are we going to do this weird special effect? And mostly they're practical, or it's like a CGI spurt of blood or whatever. So these can be, you know, you can make a $2 million film, and then if it catches on and it gets popular and it's done well, it can cross $80, $100 million.
Yeah, and that's like, the thing is you don't need a lot of money to do a good horror movie.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. No.
Like, I think Friday the 13th, you think of Friday the 13th, the series, as like low production value, super cheap, it's horror. Honestly, those movies have some of the highest grossing movies based on their cost versus their revenue.
Exactly.
People are going to go see horror movies and people are going to continue to go see them. And it doesn't cost anything to make it.
Yeah, you can make the Avengers in 2012 or 2011, whatever it was. But you got to pay all those celebrities.
Millions upon millions.
And all that. So,
hundreds of millions.
Yeah, so pound for pound, you know.
Tit for tat.
Ooh.
Quid pro quo.
Forget I was going to say.
And supposedly, Infinity War and Endgame both had budgets approaching $300 million a piece.
Yeah, and half of that was just Robert Downey Jr.'s like fucking writer.
Yeah, exactly.
Mustache writer.
Yeah. But no, I knew nothing of this. I mean, I'd heard of it, but I knew nothing about it when I watched it. So I think that sometimes makes it better.
And it's reached cult status. Were you done with your synopsis yet?
Yeah, no, I'm done with my synopsis. I don't know if it has reached cult status. I don't know how popular it is.
I think it has because I remember seeing it on Netflix a lot.
Well, and that's
I
remember, the thing.
I don't know if it has a Rotten Tomato score. I
distribution
up.
Wise, it never made it to theaters. So it went straight to streaming around the time that Netflix streaming really started catching on.
Yeah.
So that was around 2013, 2012. And so it got picked up by Magnet. It was essentially straight to DVD, or what we would now consider straight to DVD. But,
yeah.
You know, it was distributed on streaming, and that's when the streaming catalog for Netflix was not that big. Mm-mm. So I think it got some attention there. 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And the tomato meter and the audience score, which I think is Flixster, I believe.
And it's the kind of movie that will appeal to critics because it's like, as a critic, it's like, even somebody like myself who's not a horror fan, you still recognize the tropes when you see them. And so you can appreciate somebody who appreciates them and does a good job of, like, you know, paying homage. It's like you can appreciate somebody who recognizes the humor in it.
And, you know? And watching it the second time around, Alan Tudyk, I forgot, played somewhat the straight man. He was still funny in the film.
Mm-hmm.
But he was much reserved, and I was like, oh, yeah, it's much more of the Tyler's film, seems like.
Yeah, it is. Well, and it's really, it's not an ensemble, but it's a strong duo. It really is. I mean, the two play off of each other really well, and they both have their own moments where, you know, I mean, Alan Tudyk has blisters all over his face, and he's just like pouring a beer on himself to
He literally to got stung it. By a whole mass of bees.
Mm-hmm. And I, yeah... Let's not let it go by that Alan Tudyk was himself a cult status character from Firefly,
yep.
Which was 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the said 2010. I'm sure you saw it eventually in 2011. But that's, you know, a good 6-7 years of little of his own cult following.
Yeah.
So I'm sure several people watched this just for Alan Tudyk.
Yeah. It's like if I'd seen it in 2011, I would have known it because of Firefly. I would have recognized him mm-hmm. from his character there.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, he's definitely involved in cult status.
And don't want to let this go by without saying that Alan Tudyk is now in a sci-fi channel show called Resident Alien that wrapped its first season.
Which parents love.
Also great. Did you watch it?
I haven't watched it. I don't have sci-fi.
It's lovely. That's it. Continue.
but I enjoyed it a lot. You know, is it wrong to say, and you may correct me on this, but, you know, kind of a Shaun of the Dead, like, again, like that self-reverential vibe.
Yeah, it's not self-deprecating, but it's like self-aware.
Yeah.
I think is the best way to put it.
I even got some Blair Witch vibe to it of like the found footage kind of joke.
Yeah.
You know. Which I guess, I don't know if Paranormal Activity was out at that point or not, but
it definitely was.
And so it kind of hits that same vibe of like, you know, found.
Was Paranormal Activity 2005, 2008?
I can't remember. That's another one I've seen once and didn't go back to.
Yeah. I think I did my like, art history project on the director who did Paranormal Activity just cause it's like super low budget.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing.
2007, but widely released in 2009, Paranormal Activity.
Okay, so it predated this by a couple of years.
I'm a good counterpoint to you, Sean, because it's like, you know, I know you love horror movies and are a big fan. It's like, I am definitely a novice.
Todd, it's horror.
Horror movies.
Don't talk about
horror movies. I like both. Don't pigeonhole me.
So I'm a much tougher audience, I think, when it comes to horror movies. It's like I'm a lot pickier.
Yeah, and horror movies are definitely like the redhead stepchild of film.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to do a art house horror movie.
Mm-hmm. Which you got to wonder if Martin Scorsese dumps all over Marvel movies and comic movies as not art, what would he think about horror movies? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, what would his opinion of those be? Because it's like you said, those generally don't have a good opinion in the like the artsy side of the community.
They're always, you know, cheap. It's junk food.
Schlocky.
Yeah.
Popcorn film. So myself, I love sci-fi, horror, fantasy. But horror movies, I'm a little bit more reticent of just because I'm like, I jump at everything. However, once I've seen a horror film and I know where the jump scares are, and I can watch them again. And I'm like, all right, sweet. I'm way less anxious than before. Like, I can look at it through a different lens and be like, you know, this is good shit.
Yeah. And even that, you know, with this movie, it's like the jump scares and like the guy, the who becomes the eventual bad guy, Chad, like, you know, scaring the ladies in the group. And it's like, oh, you scared me. It's like, oh, they're getting me again with the trope of the jump scares. You know, it's like the you know, it's like, oh, I thought it'd be funny. It's like, you know, how many horror movies does that pop up where it's like, God, this is just fucking cheap disposable scares that they're just filling the movie with, you know, until they, we eventually get to these people getting cut up.
But, I mean, that does set it up from the beginning, is that the real evil character is the one who is, you know, it's the banality of evil. It's like the character that's been there all along.
Yeah.
You know, he's the real evil one. The evil's been there with the group the entire time. And so as everybody starts dying, which is always from ridiculously over the top coincidence of like he ran into a spike or he jumped at the guy as he was like bending over from the wood chipper, you know, totally ridiculous, ludicrous kills.
Which I always get the Fargo vibes when I see the wood chipper and like,
yeah.
Oh, is it Peter Stormare in Fargo? Like, is it Steve Buscemi that he's feeding the wood chipper? And you see, like, Steve Buscemi's foot sticking out. And he's, like, hitting it with trying to get it to, like, go into the wood chipper. And it's like there's, like, blood spraying everywhere.
Yeah.
It's a,
or, like, the sheriff, like, obviously they set up the joke of, like, the beam that Ben, like, breaks. Yeah. And then, like, a spike comes swinging off. Mm-hmm. The sheriff leans against the beam and just gets spiked right in the forehead. Mm-hmm. Like, it's horrendous. Great. It's just, it's stupid. It's cheap. I love it.
It's a little bit so much. Also like Kill Bill, like Tarantino, where it's like Kill Bill is violent. And again, you get somebody who gets like spiked through the head with a nail. And it's like in the first one, and it's like over the top, like cartoon, like Looney Tunes, like almost grand piano in the head.
Yeah. Has keys in the mouth.
It's like, but, yeah, it's violent, but it's also like stupid violent.
They also get to the point though in the film where it's the whole thing has been a series of miscommunications and nobody sits and stops and talks, but they get to that point. They actually like calm down, like
literally make tea and sit down.
Yeah. They get to the point where like the two different factions that are having the miscommunication, they're like, hold on, just sit down. Let's talk to each other. Let's figure this out. Neither one is violent at this time. And they both come to the table and literally sit down and just talk. Now they like talk over some other stuff, but like they try to understand each other for a little bit in the film. We're like, God damn it. If somebody would just sit and try and mediate and talk this out, like this whole thing could be resolved. Oh wait, no. And it, you know, goes off the rails.
It's dramatic irony to like its 10th degree. Like it's just, it's just so just like, fuck, it's frustrating. Just like, just talk to each other. Just like, clearly this isn't a suicide cult, but I think these kids are killing themselves. That makes so much sense.
Yeah. And it's like, I hate to say it, it's a little bit like Three's Company. I don't know if you guys ever saw it. It's like where it's like all those episodes could have been solved with one line of dialogue if somebody had said it. All
or it's like half the plots of Seinfeld would be resolved if they just had cell phones.
Yeah.
Like if they could just reach each other, like the movie theater episode where they're just waiting in line.
Yeah.
It's like the show would be pointless if they're cell phones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything where they're, or, you know, George, like the jerk store call and they're running out of you. It's like, he could have called the guy on his cell phone. He could have reached him like mobile. He didn't have to track him down.
Mm-hmm. Jerk store called. They're running out of you.
But yeah. And then sister, which is like, oh yeah, they're making her dig her own grave. You know, it's like, you know, classic like misunderstanding the scene again, like you say, with no communication going on.
It's a hole for the poop hole. It's a shitter hole.
it's
crap hole.
But yeah, it was pretty enjoyable. It's a good like comfort food movie. You know,
it is definitely one of my comfort food movies.
Yeah. It was super easy to watch my second time around. I was like, oh yes, yeah, this is good shit.
It was like, for me, it's weird, but I go back to Tarantino, it's like Pulp Fiction was like that for me growing up, where it was like if I was sick and like not at all feeling good, it's like I could pop in Pulp Fiction and just have a great time watching that.
What's so great with the dialogue that you know what's coming and you love all the lines in there, you're like, yeah, this is
Yeah, it really is
comfort. Butter and
it's like
biscuits.
You feel good watching it. you know, put you in a good mood. So I had fun.
Yeah, it's just like, it's relaxing in the sense that like the kills are goofy, but like in a enjoyable way, yeah. You know?
I mostly enjoyed the like Alan Tudyk and Tyler
Labine.
I like their it was a buddy comedy to me, yeah. And then you know,
great chemistry.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They just had the plot to drive them forward and keep, you know, talking shit.
What did Alan Tudyk's parents think? I wonder, watching, like, because they tracked this movie down again. I picture like just a sweet couple, like proud of their son. I mean, they watch this like horrendously gory, bloody horror movie.
I'm sure it's not like the worst thing that he's been in.
Yeah,
it's still not super gory. Like even the wood chipper.
The wood chipper scene was definitely the worst.
What, even that it was comedic though.
It's played for comedy, but it's like they definitely pull a body with intestines dragging out of it.
But imagine like the scary movies, like spoof movies. But imagine that they're actually good.
Yeah.
Like it's almost that level. Like it's not crazy fountains of blood. Like this is not realistic whatsoever, but it's comedic. Yeah. It's hard to explain comedic wood chipper death, but that's exactly what it is.
And that's a good band name.
That's been my problem with explaining this movie to anybody at any time, is like it's hard to put into words what the value in this movie is and why it's enjoyable.
One thing I noticed, side note, the flashback scenes, like Kill Bill supposedly Tarantino did like some scenes with Uma Thurman in the like the whatever restaurant with the massacre, black and white, so that they could avoid NC-17.
Oh yeah,
you're more likely to get an R rating if you do black and white with blood scenes.
Interesting.
Uh huh. And so there are multiple random scenes where she's hacking up people in that restaurant with a machete, but they go to black and white.
Yeah,
to make it that. Less graphic.
Huh.
You see that in this movie too. They flash back to whatever 1991. They have a weird like, I don't know if it's black and white or sepia, but it's like it's a different tone.
Which is right. Ironic though, because this was direct to DVD and never got
makes the red less
wide,
red
wide release.
Yeah.
Todd, if I may, you've only seen this film once.
Yeah.
Pitch it to me. Like, don't pitch it, but like, tell me I should watch.
Sell
it.
Sell me
like,
on this movie.
Yeah. How would you describe it? Because I've seen it now twice.
I've definitely
seen it several four or five times. How would you describe it to somebody and tell somebody to watch it?
I mean, I would say it definitely combines the intelligence of like Cabin in the Woods, but with the humor of Zombieland, Shaun of the Dead. Like it's a very like reverential, but also like you say, self-aware horror movie. So it's kind of a romp for horror fans. You know, it's like if you like a good horror movie, you will enjoy this because it kind of sends up everything you love about horror movies.
I felt rompy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say romp would be the right word.
Comedic.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a fun. A
comedic horror romp.
Yeah.
Romp.
Yeah. And that satisfies that because it's like if you're not a horror fan, you might find violence and stuff like that off-putting. You might find people getting stabbed in the head or whatever. You know, you might find that stuff to be kind of...
I think you should be off-putting.
Which I love pudding, by the way. But just it's
give
like...
Give me my snack pack.
But horror...
Snack packs are so fucking good.
It's like horror fans will appreciate the idea of people like constantly accidentally harpooning themselves. Or like...
Throwing themselves into a wood chipper. Yeah. Or just like randomly throwing a lighter at a pile of gas.
Yeah. Or it's like to me, it's a trope all across movies. When people pick up a gun, it automatically is like live and firing ammo. But it's like anybody who is knowledgeable about guns is going to have a safety on. And it's like the first time somebody picks up like, and tries to shoot it, it's going to be not live.
He just shoots himself in the worst way.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But that also goes with the stats that people who own guns are more likely to die from that gun than use it successfully in self-defense. It's like you're more likely to be a victim of your own gun.
So yep.
That definitely goes along with that.
But you know what? It's Oklahoma, so you have a right to shoot yourself with that gun.
You have a right to blow the front of your face off.
Yep, on accident.
Yeah. Face off. But yeah, it was fun. It was an enjoyable movie. And, you know, I would definitely recommend it. to anybody who is both knowledgeable about horror, but also, you know, can handle the violence and life's a good laugh.
Sean, do you have any Jerry Springer final thoughts for us?
Final thoughts. I highly recommend it. I really wish it had gotten more attention at the time that it got released, but I'm sure by now, with streaming deals, that it's gotten the attention it deserves and hopefully has netted a positive.
Made good money.
Where did we stream it?
Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime.
But before that, it was on Netflix. I know that for sure. It was
on Netflix for quite a while.
And so I'm sure they got paid well for both of those to be on there and streaming.
Yeah, hopefully. But I mean, it got picked up by Magnet, so I'm sure they're doing with it what they do.
Yeah.
But yep.
But, I mean, and this is the perfect example of what we're going for this whole series of like movies that have snuck by.
I wish it had gotten more attention at the time, but it didn't. And you know what? That's okay.
Yeah. But yeah, this is like the perfect example, I think, of all the movies you watch. I mean, I picked Tombstone, which is, you know, full of famous people and is on TBS probably right now.
When I had a heart-to-heart with Alan Tudyk's parents 10 years ago, you know, we really talked down and we hashed it out and we talked about it. And they said, you know what? In 10 years, you're going to podcast on this and I want you to get the word out.
I picked a Batman animated series mainly because I wanted Taylor to watch it and ask him questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah,
yeah. Where is Taylor? Is he hitchhiking back in Patagonia?
Mm-hmm.
Well, or he might be following the George Carlin rules of the road.
Ass, grass, or cash?
Well, yeah. Basically. Just hitching.
Yeah. I remember one time he wanted to do a triathlon through the Valley of Death or somewhere in like Central America. And it's like, he was trying
triathlon through the Valley of Death is my ska band name.
I see that more shoegazing, but either way, he wanted me to be like a translator for him. And it's like, I don't speak Spanish and I don't want to die. So, 0-2.
Well, onward, Christian soldier.
But hopefully, we will have Tay back with us next time. He's so cute and I want to hug him. But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino.
Listen, rate, subscribe. Leave a comment.
Tell us you love us.
Find us on any platform that you like to listen to podcasts.
And stay tuned for a new broadcast, a new Toddcast with these same people. And we will be doing some new and exciting stuff. So.
Can't wait.
With our nipples.
Yeah. Right up against the microphone.
Same color as your lip, I heard.
I really wish we'd just sign off with that. That would be the last thing. That would be the perfect closing thing right there.
Well.
But anyway.
It's not too late to edit.
Well, yeah, we got 2 minutes. So, side note, it's like watching The Bourne Identity in the theaters. You know, when it first came out, I remember like thinking this is a badass movie up until the very end when he finds the girl at like some Greek like beach and she's at like the shop selling scooters, and the closing line of the movie was he finds her and's like, you know where I can rent a scooter, and then that's it. Fade to black.
Franca Potente.
Yes.
And run, it's like, Lola run.
Yeah.
Do you know where I can rent a scooter?
Yeah. It's like somebody like is typing at a typewriter or like a word processor, like, yeah, that's good, we're done.
I wish the last line in Princess Bride had been Andre Giant saying, anybody want a peanut?
Because I remember I was there with some buddies from college, and we started laughing out loud when it was like, you know where I can rent a scooter? Credits. Anyway, it's been another episode of Cinema Vino.
And
we thank you.
Hasn't it?
Listen, rate, subscribe. Wait, where did I say that?
Yeah, we're, yeah. I think we already covered that.
Yeah.
Put a comment down in the comments.
Franca Potente.
Find us where you listen to podcasts.
Exactly. Apple Podcasts, Spotify. But we'll have all that coming up in a second.
Anywhere where Taco Bell is sold.
Yeah. So we will see you all very soon. I could go. You can listen, rate, subscribe to Cinema Vino, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you choose to listen to your podcasts. My movie reviews are available at ToddWoffordMovies.com.